And the recording is now starting, and so we will get underway with that. I have only been acquainted with our special guest today, Scott Tipps, for a short while, and I look forward to meeting him at the Health and Freedom conference that's coming up. Actually, it starts tomorrow, and it's being held at the Ontario Airport Hilton Hotel in Ontario, and that's here in Southern California. It's the 2010 Take Back America Health and Freedom Conference, and it's going to be quite an event. I have attended in the past for several years, and I can say this: it's certainly it's quite an event. It's not only for the presentations given there, but everything, the people attending, the vendor tables, the whole works. It's being held from the 12th through the 15th. That's tomorrow through Monday, and it's packed full. One of the things that Republic Magazine unveiled yesterday is that we're, for those that cannot make it physically to the event, we're streaming the event live at no charge. If folks want to have unlimited access to the streaming in the future, to utilize at any time that they so choose, they can do that by making a donation to this whole thing. And you can find more information about the conference at freedomlawconference.com. That's freedomlawconference.com. And then for the streaming, you can, starting tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. Pacific time, you can go to our website set up for that and be able to access that particular streaming. And it will be found at healthfreedomconference.com. That's healthfreedomconference.com. And at any time today during the webinar, if you want to speak with today's special guest and you're on the phone line, just dial *2 on your phone keypad, and that way we'll know that you'd like your line unmuted, and we can do so at the appropriate time, and you can ask your question and speak with our special guest. If you're on the Internet and listening via that connection, there's a small question box just under the link that's there on that page. Type in your question. It'd be helpful if you put a first name, city, and a state, and then submit that to us, and we'll make sure that the question gets asked. And you'll find the replay of this particular webinar, as well as all of our past webinars, at republicmagazine.com/webinar. And with that, I want to introduce our special guest today, and he is he's someone that has been very busy, I can see, from the things that he's involved with. And Scott Tipps, J.D., is the editor of Health Freedom News, and he's also the president and legal counsel for the National Health Federation. And Scott received his Bachelor of Arts degree, magna cum laude, from the University of California in Los Angeles in 1976. He studied at the Sorbonne, Paris, from 1976 to 77, and obtained his Juris Doctorate degree from the University of California Berkeley School of Law in 1980, where he was the managing editor of the California Law Review. A California licensed attorney, he was admitted to the California Bar in 1980 and has specialized in food and drug and trademark law. But he also engages in business litigation, general business law, and nonprofit organizations with an international clientele. Since 1989, Mr. Tipps has been the general counsel to the National Health Federation, the world's oldest health freedom organization for consumers. In 2007, Mr. Tipps became the NHF president and has been a speaker for the organization on several continents. A legal columnist, he writes a monthly column for Whole Foods magazine called Legal Tipps, a column he started in 1984. Currently, Mr. Tips is occupying much of his time with health freedom issues involving the Codex Alimentarius Commission and its other attempts to limit freedom of choice in health matters. And in that capacity, he has recently compiled, edited, and published a book on the subject entitled Codex Alimentarius, Global Food Imperialism. He also attends Codex meetings worldwide and has attended more Codex meetings than any other health freedom activist. Wow. Scott, you have been a busy guy. You I could tell you're committed. You're all over the globe. In fact, I think when I first tried to get in contact with you, you were out of the country for a while, and then you came back in, and we were able to easily get in contact then. But I know you were hopping the globe, and it sounds like you're doing a lot of good work, not just here in the U.S., but all over the world, trying to protect our health freedom, and that's so important to so many of us because, you know, we here as whatever we call us, patriots or freedom workers, we're folks that want to see our rights protected in all areas. We call ourselves constitutionalists or libertarians or civil libertarians or whatever you want to, free market supporters, whatever name you want to give us. But we really want to see freedom protected in all areas, and you certainly do that. Welcome to the webinar.
Well, thank you, Earl, very much. And I really do appreciate the opportunity to do this, and I appreciate whoever the listeners are, because they show a degree of interest that you don't actually often see. I see it increasingly as I go around, and as you mentioned, I've been really busy. Monday I left Paris, France, to come back here for this event this weekend out in Ontario, California. But prior to that, I'd been giving speeches in Belgium and Germany, in the Netherlands and Finland and Sweden and Ireland, trying to think of where else, besides going to the Codex meetings that have been held, and then we have some coming up. So it's been a real busy time for health freedom, and especially with the events going on here in the U.S. of late with the McCain bill, and then McCain being talked out of it by his having been inundated, literally inundated with emails and letters, a huge number, our own NHF petition signed by thousands upon thousands of people. I don't know how many, but it was a huge number. And so he dropped out of that bill, and we can get into that in more detail. But, you know, I'm happy to start wherever you would like. Should I start with Codex or health freedom in general?
You could. I would, you know, one thing that might be interesting, just to kind of preface that and then move into that, is sort of roll back a little bit and maybe pinpoint the point in your life where you first started resonating with this type of movement, this type of activity, where you first became aware of what was going on, and then what stimulated you to go the next step and the next step, and how you ended up being involved where you are today.
Okay. Well, I started out when I was 14 years old, and actually when I was 12 years old and rode my bicycle to a Goldwater rally in the town that I lived in. And so maybe it actually started when I was 12 and then later when I was 14. And started getting more involved, but that was more into ordinary politics and having the mindset then that, you know, being the patriot that I was then, and I still am, but certainly that time it was much narrower focus, and got involved in the Young Americans for Freedom and ended up being a graduate, as we would say, with quote marks around it, of the class of 1969. That is the group of libertarians that split off from Young Americans for Freedom in 1969 and helped found the Texas Libertarian Party with my roommate in 1971, I think it was. It could have been 72, but I think it was 1971. And then kind of became a libertarian with a little L, not a big L, meaning not a party libertarian, but more movementist type, and then went to law school, was in France for a while. I'd always traveled internationally quite extensively, and so ended up wanting to live in France for a while, went to school there, and then came back to go to law school at Berkeley, got a degree. It was not a libertarian or even conservative location, so I was often having to argue with all my fellow students, but it was still a good environment. And then when I came out, Dirk Pearson and Sandy Shaw, whom some of your listeners may have heard of and who wrote the book Life Extension that was on the New York Times bestseller list in 1982, it came out in May 1982, they're very close friends of mine, still close friends, but especially close at that time. And they said, Scott, you're a lawyer and you're interested in health and nutrition. Why don't you do food and drug law? And I thought about it, and I thought, you know what, they're right. And so I moved into that field and became one of the first two food and drug lawyers west of the Mississippi and started representing companies against the FDA. And that's really how I got more and more into the health freedom movement. Then in 1986, I joined the National Health Federation, and then in 1989, joined the Board of Governors and became the legal counsel, a position I've held ever since. So that's been 21 years now, is that right? And then became president when the former president, Maureen Solomon, died, passed on. She'd been president for 20 years. So we're the world's oldest health freedom organization, and that's not lightly said. It's 55 years old in last January. And we've always been at the forefront of fighting water fluoridation, needless vaccinations, promoting the right of individuals to take whatever supplements and vitamin, mineral, herbs, the like, that they want, and to promote alternative healthcare practitioners to be able to practice. We defended chiropractors back when they were in the negative zone. Nowadays they're considered mainstream, but back in the 50s and 60s they were not, and we got them properly licensed and respected. These days we're opposed to licensing, but at that time I still think it was the right play to make because it was the only way to get them into sort of a mainstream acceptance. These days, the NHF opposes licensing because we see it as a trap for all these naturopathic doctors and others, but we do promote their acceptance and use by other people. But having said all that, I want to emphasize that we are an organization of individuals. We don't represent companies. We aren't a trade organization. We are just simply there for individual, and I hate to use the word consumer because I don't know. It's just a word I don't like. It's too technical and too sterile. But in any event, that's really what it comes down to. We have members who pay $36 a year. You can go online at our website and join right now on a secure link. And it really helps us out because the $36 just barely covers the bills for keeping a membership in place. And we have a magazine that goes out and the like. But anyway, to cut to the chase, we had been following the Codex meetings. Codex Alimentarius is an international body that was created by the Food and Agriculture Organization and the World Health Organization back in the time frame of 1961 to 63. And depending upon whom you talk to, you'll get one or the other of those dates. But the enabling resolutions to create it started in the 61. And then it was finally put all into effect in 1963, and it's carried on ever since. But it first came to our attention in the mid-90s, and we sent a reporter over there, paid her expenses and everything to start reporting on the meetings. Well, by 2000, it had become more important because they were trying to put in place standards and guidelines that would really suppress dietary supplements. That is a European kind of mentality of control and viewing these natural products as toxic organisms or toxic chemicals that should be suppressed. And certainly that worked in favor of the very strong pharmaceutical companies that are in place and have a lot of power over there in Europe, as well as here in this country in Canada. So in the year 2000, I proposed to the then president of NHF that because I was living near Monaco, that I just hop on a plane, go stay with a friend, and go to a Codex meeting as a member of the U.S. delegation. And that's what I did. For $600, I attended that first meeting. It was very cheap, and I got a real feel for how these meetings are held. This was the Codex Committee on Nutrition and Foods for Special Dietary Uses. It has an acronym that just rolls off your tongue, CCNFSBU. And I'm being facetious here. And so I got a chance to see how it operated, and I was on the U.S. delegation for 2 years, and then because I was so outspoken and troublesome, but you can't speak out at the meetings if you're on the U.S. delegation. You sit there like a bump on a log, and you can pass notes, or at the private meeting held by the delegate and her delegation before the Codex meeting starts, you can express your opinions, but they usually are not considered at all. So anyway, the third year, the third Codex meeting that I went to for that committee, and there are many committees at Codex level, by the way, some 27 at this point, but this was the most important for us. At the third meeting, she didn't let me come back on the delegation. And actually, she did us the biggest favor she could have ever done is that. And the reason is that then it motivated me to apply for and get recognized accredited Codex status for the National Health Federation. It took me 3 tries, but the third time I got it, they kept turning me down. It all occurred in the space of 6 weeks, by the way. I just kept pushing. Finally, they let us in, and they've regretted it ever since, I'm sure. But what that gave us was a seat at the Codex meetings where we had our own microphone, and I could actually start speaking out almost the same as a country delegation. Because at these meetings, you have a chairman or chairwoman, you have the Codex staff around him or her, and then you have the country delegates from Afghanistan to Zimbabwe, and Codex its membership represents 99% of the world's population at this point. And then behind them you have what are known as the INGOs, the International Non-Governmental Organizations. And most of these are trade organizations, like the World Sugar Research Organization or the International Dairy Federation, that sort of thing. Even for supplements, you have the Council for Responsible Nutrition, you have IADSA, International Alliance of Dietary Food Supplement Associations, but those are all trade organizations. The number of consumer organizations you could probably count on one hand and have fingers left over, and the NHF was one of those. The others are mostly left-wing consumer organizations like Consumers Alliance, is it? I don't know why I'm blocking on their name. That's not really their name. The International Infant Baby Formula Action Network, IBFAN, 49th Parallel Consortium, kind of a science fiction-y name for a Canadian-American organization. But these are all, most of these are actually very anti-supplement. So really what that leaves us with is that Codex meetings are the only voice for dietary supplement freedom and health freedom is NHF. So I don't know if that helps set the stage for all of this, Earl.
Yes, it really does. And, I think the thing is with so many people, because I've received all kinds of emails. I've had people tell me conflicting information. There's tremendous confusion about, is there Codex Amilitarius? Is it not? Did it get killed? Is it pushing forward? Is part of it in effect? Is it in effect in part of the world and not other areas? Is there any part of it in effect here or due to go in effect here? What is the status? And maybe you could help really clarify that for us.
Okay. Well, that's an excellent question, actually, and I'm glad you asked it at this stage because it really does need to be clarified because there is a lot of confusion out there, and I keep encountering it, and sort of the worst offenders are some of these health freedom activists and health freedom organizations that are spewing out incorrect, totally incorrect information. and it actually does us more of a disservice than a service. You know, keep in mind that Codex Alimentarius is a multi, I hate to say headed, but kind of a multi-layer organization. As I mentioned, it has some 27 different committees that range on things like fish and fishery products, contaminants in food, food additives, general principles committee, the Codex Committee on Food Labeling that meets in Canada. The Codex Committee on Contaminants in Food is hosted by the Dutch government, normally meets there, but this year will meet in Turkey. German committee, the CCNFSDU committee that I mentioned that we've been going to for a very long time, Natural Mineral Waters Committee that meets in Switzerland and the like. So keeping that in mind, you'll realize that there are a lot of different standards that are and guidelines that are being developed in all these different committees that are in various stages of development and consideration. They go through an eight-step process, step one through eight, with final adoption by the committee itself, and then final adoption by the Codex Alimentarius Commission that basically rubber stamps whatever the committees do. I rarely see the Codex Commission itself go against the findings of the committees. But so these are all in layers and levels of processes. And what happens is right now there are Codex standards that were adopted 10, 15 years ago that are in existence, hundreds of them. There are others that are just coming online. There are others that are just starting their development. So to say that Codex, with quote marks around it, is in has been adopted is sort of like saying, you know, we've adopted all the laws and statutes and regulations and rules of the United States. But we didn't. That took hundreds of years, actually many hundreds of years, even predating the founding of the U.S. because we adopted the common law of Great Britain, and it's still in process. So you have to pick and choose what is the actual area that you're talking about. What most people mean when they ask that question, and what most people are concerned about, is not fish and fisheries, not even contaminants in food usually, but it's the dietary supplement guidelines. That's what they're usually concerned about. That, the guidelines which we fought tooth and nail back in, well, ending in 2004 with the committee adoption of the guidelines, and 2005 with the commission's adoption of those guidelines, and I was the only voice to speak out in a room of 300-plus people against their adoption in July 2005. And then in the fall of 2004, a South African delegate and I were the only ones to speak out against its prior adoption by the committee. But even those guidelines are just a framework right now. They just give the barest of details, and they're now in the process of doing the risk assessment to fill in the blank spaces, because one of the things that the guidelines say that were adopted is there will be maximum upper permitted limit on vitamin mineral food supplements. We don't think there should be any, quite honestly. And then the Europeans, especially the French and the Germans and the Norwegians, who see vitamin mineral supplements as highly dangerous, probably to pharmaceutical industry profits, but anyway, it's highly dangerous, want to cap them at very, very low levels. This is a huge, huge problem. So we're in the process of fighting the fine-tuned details that are going on. And this is still in process. There were some people who claimed that Codex would take effect as of December 31, 2009. If any of you ever heard that information, I want to tell you they were not only flat out wrong, and I think knowingly wrong, but, you know, that's a hypothesis on my part, but you should turn to your sources of information to other people, because if they misled you on such an important detail and something that they as experts should have known about on something like that, and they were absolutely flat-out wrong, how could you possibly trust them to give you accurate information elsewhere? What those people were doing were confusing the December 31st, 2009 final implementation date for the European Union Food Supplements Directive, which would affect the various countries of the European Union, they were confusing that with Codex, mixing them as one and the same. And by raising the false alarm, they did us a disservice. The same people, there's one group in particular that had done this back in 2005, saying that Codex was going to remove all vitamin and mineral supplements from American health food store shelves by July 31, 2005. And I told them at the time, I didn't know them from Adam, I said, this is wrong. This is not going to happen. And you're, when it doesn't happen, you're going to make the rest of us look bad because we'll all be painted with the same brush. And in fact, as we all know, even today, as I sit here right now in Los Angeles, California, I can walk across the street and go into a health food store here and buy everything I could buy then, maybe even more. So we don't do anyone a service by giving them false information, because you can only ring the alarm bell, cry wolf, so many times before people get battle fatigue and say, hey, another false cry. And then when the real cry is given, the real alarm is given, they won't go to do what's necessary, what's important. So it's really critical to be aware that just because someone calls himself a health freedom activist or a health freedom fighter or whatever it is, or even health freedom organization, they may not be giving you the truth, may not be giving you accurate information. What we have now is a lot of third world countries are adopting Codex guidelines even before Codex itself adopts those guidelines. They're adopting incomplete guidelines. They're so desperate for those. And in Europe, you have the European Union Food Supplements Directive that's in place and is starting to remove vitamin supplements from store shelves. Already actually had started, but really in excruciatingly detail now, remove them from British shelves, Irish shelves, Swedish and Dutch shelves, store shelves, where they are the most liberal and most freedom-loving there. So we don't have it happening here in the U.S. yet. We aren't under the gun that way, but we do have our domestic threats through the form of this McCain legislation, which is still a threat, and through the Obama health care bill, which is a huge, huge threat, even more so even than the McCain bill, as bad as it is. It's a huge threat because it'll be a big vacuum cleaner sucking up all those alternative health care dollars and supplement dollars going into the medical system, the orthodox medical system. We can touch on that more if you like, but did that answer your question a bit?
Sure, it definitely did. And, you know, certainly I think it would help people to understand a little bit more about that. You certainly feel free to continue on that. I think you were mentioning the McCain bill that has been referred to.
Yeah, that's Senate Bill 3002. It was introduced on February 4th, and ostensibly because some highly paid athletes, as well as admittedly some amateur athletes, not so well paid and not paid, but had taken some supplements that had illegal steroids added to them. And this is a problem. It's not a false problem, although it is a false situation in the sense that as we sit here right now, the laws have been in place for decades that enabled the FDA to go in and remove those kind of products from the marketplace. You don't need a new bill. This is totally redundant. This is totally unnecessary. Yet with it, it's the attempt to put the wedge in and take away even more of our health freedoms. It's really amazing what it does. As Dirk Pearson pointed out himself, he said, you know, analogize McCain's actions to wanting to register all manufacturers, even multi-level marketers, would be registered as a dietary supplement facility under this bill, and to require that any supplement being sold be on an approved list. Well, imagine if after the Richard Reed shoe bomber, remember him, the shoe bomber that went on that transatlantic flight, and then they caught him trying to set fire to his shoe so it would explode. Well, you know, imagine if John McCain had been in charge of Homeland Security at that time. What would he have done? He would have registered all the shoe manufacturers. He would have required all shoe designs to be approved by a federal shoe design czar. He would have required the recallability for all shoes by the federal government. He would have heaped all sorts of bureaucracy and regulations on this. And do we really honestly think that would have prevented another bombing? No, what they did was the more sensible thing is to stop people at the airport and ask them to X-ray their shoes when they go in. That's the way you do it. You go after the bombers themselves. You don't go after all the innocent people. I realize innocent people are affected here. I go through the airport all the time, have to take my shoes off, et cetera. But the point is there's a far more effective way to do it that more surgically addresses the problem instead of trying to lump everyone in and heap hugely expensive, time-consuming rules and regulations on supplements. Really what they're trying to do is get back to the FDA those arbitrary powers that the FDA had removed from it by the passage of the Dietary Supplement Health and Education Act, that is the SHE, back in 1994, which has been very successful. Even though it wasn't a perfect bill, at least it helped give us back some of our freedom that the FDA had been, you know, chipping away at for years before and had succeeded in having all these arbitrary powers. So anyway, there was so much serious and sustained opposition to the McCain bill that McCain came out just last week and said he was withdrawing his support. Evidently, Orrin Hatch of Utah, the senator from Utah, had talked him out of it, as well as all that hate mail that McCain was getting. And McCain's up for re-election, so he's got to think twice about this. In fact, I know personally a lot of people who are going to go to Arizona and campaign against him. We as an organization, NHF, we can't take positions on candidates, but individuals can. And these people are going as individuals there to fight against. In fact, I think they're still planning on doing it because they don't trust the guy. But in any event, there's a co-sponsor, Byron Dorgan of North Dakota, Democrat from North Dakota. And so the bill can still go forward, and it's still worthy of being opposed, strongly opposed. So I would encourage all your listeners to go to our website, www.thenhf.com, and then click on the government affairs button, and then click again on the federal button, and you will go and see two charts, the red chart for bills we oppose and a blue chart for those we support. And there at the top of the red chart is the so-called Dietary Supplement Safety Act of 2010, also known as S3002, and you can click on the petition, on the suggested letter. There's even a bill. You click on the link for the bill. You can read it yourself if you want. It's very not a lengthy one at all. And then oppose it, because we still need persistent and vocal opposition to this. Write to your own senators. Write to Byron Dorgan, write to Jack Reed of Rhode Island, who's on the health committee that the bill is in front of. But this is hugely important. The other thing that's coming up is the Obamacare thing. And that's the 8,000-pound gorilla sitting in the middle of the room that most health freedom fighters don't realize is such a huge threat. You know, they're all sucked into, I wouldn't say all, but many of them are sucked into this guilt trip of thinking, oh, we have to reach into other people's pockets to pay for the health care of the needy. But, you know, it's just going to make health care worse in the U.S., not better, number one, for everyone. Two, we can't even afford it. Our country's broke. We can't afford the trillion-plus dollars it will take to put this in effect. Number three, it's really not a health care bill anyway. It's a disease care bill. Number four, it's really not even a health care bill for another reason, and that is the fact that when you look at it, it's really a money-making scam, actually, on the part of the federal government, because they're so broke, they need money, and the healthcare industry is such a huge, huge market. So what they're doing is making people pay with penalties and taxes and everything, huge penalties and if you don't abide by it, huge fee payments. I mean, a typical family will have to pay $15,000 a year. How many can really afford that of the lower and middle classes? Who can afford that? Anyway, they pay that money, but for 3 years, the government federal government is going to be raking in these dollars without having to pay out a single benefit. So what do you think they're going to use that for? Are they going to put it in a little kitty and save it for the rainy day? Well, anyone listening to this conference who believes that should hang up immediately, because you know the answer to that. They're going to start spending it like teenage boys with whiskey in the dad's car keys. They're going to be out having a party time, because that's what they're into, and that's what it's all about. It's not about health care. If it were, they'd implement the health benefits immediately. If it's so urgent, why don't they implement that yesterday? So it's all about raking in the big bucks for them, and so they can perpetuate their own power. This thing has got to be killed. Once it goes into effect, think about it. All this money will be drained out. A typical family of three or four people having to pay $15,000 a year, how much are they going to have left for real health care? It's going to go into all the mainstream medicine, drugs, the things that kill people right and left, that don't really help them, the hospitals, all these things that kill a million people a year, and are responsible for deaths of up to a million people a year. That's what it's going to go into, leaving families with very little money to spend on alternative practitioners who really can help people, and on supplements that can help keep them from getting sick in the first place, or even just a generally healthy diet, eating organic food, freshly grown food, that sort of thing. So this is a real danger if it goes into effect. And there's even more. There are invasions of privacy. You know, it's the usual sausage-making machine where they throw in all their little special favors and their little treats. So this has got to be stopped. So maybe even more importantly than the McCain bill, it's important to write your senators and oppose it, because Obama, Mr. Obama, I don't call him President Obama because I don't think he's legitimately president, Mr. Obama wants to bring it up on the floor for a vote next Tuesday, is my latest information as of about an hour or two ago.
We're definitely going to stop it. There's no doubt. I love this quote on the website, the NHF.com, and it says, "It is not the function of our government to keep the citizen from falling into error. It is the function of the citizen to keep the government from falling into error." And that was by Robert Hotwood Jackson, chief judge at the War Crimes Tribunal in Nuremberg. That's an interesting quote.
Yeah, thank you for mentioning that. Yeah, I put that up there when I read that for the first time, and I thought, gosh, that'll make a good general quote for us. And it's true, because a lot of the arguments, as you know, from the Nazi defendants at the war crimes trial after the Second World War was, oh, we were just doing our duty, we were just following orders, you know, the usual thing like that. And what a lot of people forget, although it's right there in front of our faces, is that a government is like an entropy machine. It's like a black hole in a gravitational field. Over time, governments accumulate increasing power. That's true of every single government. The natural tendency of government is to grab, and government bureaucrats and politicians is to increase their power, grab more and more power. And that's what's happened with every country, and especially in the U.S. is it evident, that has happened over the years. We were intended to be a decentralized government with power diffused down to the levels of the states, the municipalities, and the people, not to be concentrated in Washington, D.C. But everything's been flipped on its head, and now increasingly all the reins of power are flowing to Washington, D.C. And the more you get the rulers removed from the immediate environment of the ruled, then the more corruption you have, the more abuse of power you have, the heavier the taxation, all of that. We've got to break that cycle and diffuse the power back down to the people at local and state levels. I mean, that's the way our country was founded. That's where it should return to. And part and parcel of all of this, just sort of looping it back to the Codex theme and even the European Union theme, is we see hours in Washington actually being globalized now. Now they want to do, of course they have for years, but North American Union to model it on the European Union. And then once they get all these regional blocks created, then they'll join it together into one big happy family as the world government. And if people think that's going to be a delight, it's not, because all that means is the power makers, the rule makers, our rulers, the princes, the perfume princes will be making their decisions from thousands, tens of thousands of miles away and very much removed from the populace. They will treat us like the lowest dirt you can imagine. They already are, but it'll be even worse should that come into effect. The best model has been hypothesized by many is you do a Swiss confederation, you know, just a loose confederation of individual states, the minor countries and the like, and that's the way our country was envisioned to be as well, but something went awry long ago, and it's picking up steam and power, and we've just got to stop it. And we've especially got to stop it at this next election. I think this will be truly our last chance to throw all the bums out and take back control, or at least start taking back control of our country. After this fall, if we don't do it this time, it will almost certainly be too late. And even this election, they may create or generate a war beforehand just to throw off the election. Who knows? They've said that before other elections and it didn't happen, but this time it may. Because they see the powers that be see the handwriting on the wall. They see how unhappy everyone is. They see the discontent in the country, and they may fear, well, now's the time to pull that rabbit out of the hat and stop this before it gets downstream. Like they did with the Republican contract with America. Remember in 94, people were so upset. They elected a landslide of anti-government politicians, or supposedly so, but then there was the Oklahoma City bombing, and that energy suddenly reversed course 180 degrees, all in one short week. And the Patriot Act came out, already pre-prepared, interestingly enough, came out, was introduced, wasn't even read, was passed, and because the fervor of the country was so, we've got to deal with these domestic terrorists. Well, the real domestic terrorists were sitting in Washington, D.C. on Capitol Hill, but no one was talking about that except for a few in the alternative press and the like. So
yeah.
Anyway, it's a long battle. I'm just focusing mainly on one aspect, which is health freedom, but I don't know if anyone has any questions or anything. Or is there
We do. We have one guest holding. Let me go ahead and unmute their line. It's anonymous, so if you speak up, I'm sure we'll hear you. Are you there, guest? Do you have a question?
Okay, can you hear me?
We can hear you, yes.
Okay, how about that? Okay, you're not a lobbying group, so I will let you know about this. We do.
Let me just interrupt real quickly to say something I didn't say before, and I apologize for this. We do have a lobbyist in Washington, Lee Bechtel. So we do retain the services of a lobbyist. Okay. Just wanted to let you know that.
Okay. Did you have a fax number?
We do. It is, for the organization, it is area code 626-303-0642. I'm doing it from memory, but I have a copy of the magazine here, and I'll just double-check it real quickly.
While you double-check it, let me just let you know that, you know, you had mentioned, and of course, this applies to, well, first of all, if anybody thinks, I presume you're aware that Nancy Pelosi made an appearance on a Charlie Rose last night.
No, I didn't. I was busy working. But
well, it's probably available from YouTube, but two of the memorable things that I recall her saying, and I'm not quoting, you know, specifically, but I remember her saying, which really cracked me up, that she wanted it to make the health care bill digestible for the American people.
Right.
And I was like, well, is she thinking that this is spinach or corn or... Lasagna, well, mashed potatoes, where are we going with this?
Right.
Adding a laxative in there or what?
Yeah, probably the latter, yeah.
And then the other thing that she you know said, you know, which anyway, she said that she made mention that and I'm not sure in what context she was saying this in, but you have to vote for a bill before you can go back and correct it. And you know my philosophy would be, why vote for it in the first place if you think
exactly.
It needs correcting? Vote against it. You know,
I totally agree with you. She's talking nonsense, and she's actually being disingenuous as well. Nancy Pelosi, interestingly enough, is the next door neighbor to one of our board members
in Baltimore or in California.
In California.
Okay.
And he knows her personally, and she told him something about how originally, like last year, that this, I forget what he told me now, but it was something that was a bold-faced lie, that, you know, that it wouldn't pass and hurt alternative care practitioners and the like. And but she said it in a much stronger way, and then, and so in any event, but you're absolutely right. I think if she's saying this, she's making it palatable or digestible for the American people, and you can go back and correct it later, that's just wrong. If they go back and correct it, they'll make it worse. They'll add on more powers, more arbitrary powers.
Well, yeah, and the other issue is that, you know, on the front of it, it is labeled or identified as a health care bill, but I have heard a lot more than health care is actually in it.
Oh, absolutely. There's so many. Unfortunately, I'm not in front of my computer right now, or I would have looked up the part of our site that has the information on it. But there's so many other things in there. In fact, making your medical records online, electronically available to almost anyone who wants to see them, at least of government and private insurer credentials. And also, I remember one of the things I read was them allowed, but I have to say and confess, I don't know if this is the truth or just misinformation, that it would allow access to your personal online accounts, your financial account, and they could even make deductions from it.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
That I can't vouch for.
Well, no, my from my perspective, I am against this. Well, first of all, the words health care don't appear in our Constitution, but that hasn't seemed to slow anybody down.
Right.
And having said that, you know, I choose because of medical records databases. You know, I don't know whether people, you know that, you know, your medical records go into, you know, databases anyway that that healthcare that health insurance companies, you know, add to, and then that's what they check, but, you know, before they offer you a policy. I choose to keep my records out of those databases, so I have gone around and, you know, gotten discount plans for the various parts of health care that I need, and, you know, then I pay a yearly rate for the discount plans, and then, you know, then when I go to a drug field or go to a doctor's, it doesn't go through insurance, but I don't pay the normal, you know, out-of-pocket fee. And, you know, right now that works for me.
Oh, that is a great idea. You don't. Is your plan an alternative plan? Does it include alternative practitioners, or is it just conventional?
It actually does not, but the alternative practitioners, surprise, surprise, are very lenient when they negotiate their fees with me. And I say surprise, surprise, because it doesn't surprise me at all that they are.
Yeah, I see what you mean.
So, you know, that, you know, for the time being, that, you know, that works for me. And also, you know, the free market economy helps a lot with reducing medical care prices, because 10 and 15 years ago, glasses were exorbitantly expensive, but with the pop-up of all of these, you know, chain eyeglass stores that are competing against one another, it's driven the cost, you know, dramatically down.
Yeah. Yes, you're absolutely right.
So but if you have confirmation for your fax number, I will.
Oh, it is. Yeah, it is the one I told you.
So it's 626-303-0642. Oh, the final thing I wanted to mention, not that I'm trying to hog the call. You mentioned about throwing the bums out, and, you know, I presume you know how difficult it is to get incumbents out of office.
Obviously. That's why they have a 98% reelection rate.
Okay. One of the things that has been begun is an Election Fraud Awareness Day on the first Tuesday of each month. And, you know, I think there's more to throwing incumbents out of office than just voting them out, and I'll leave it at that.
Well, yes, because there's so much election fraud going on. I mean, it's embedded in the system, especially with the electronic machines. You're quite right about that. There is an organization, I think it's called National Precinct Alliance, and I know Linda Garcia of that group, and she's quite prominently active in it. But you might Google all of those of you who are interested, National Precinct Alliance, and see what website you come up with and go to them. But they're also, although this is more a long-range effort, but not too long-range, maybe more mid-range effort, to take over the parties and the political process from the ground up by going into the precincts and electing the people who then go and elect at the caucuses and the conventions, elect the other people. And they have quite a groundswelling of support throughout the country. So this is another way to go. The other thing is it's just to push for the prohibition of any electronic voting machines, and then pushing for poll monitors as much as possible. But that's easier said than done, and I realize that. But thank you for Miss Anonymous for making your comments, and since we don't have your name, but in any event, I appreciate that.
Okay, talk to you later.
Okay,
and let's see, we've got hold on just a second here. We've got someone. It says Harlingen, Texas. Last four numbers are 3171. I've just unmuted your line. Are you there, guest?
Yes, sir. James Lambert's the name.
Okay.
Can you hear me?
Sure can. Did you have a question?
Yes, sir, I do. Bounced around one of the websites about 3 or 4 months ago. I don't know if it was an email I received or not right there. Somebody was going on deep in one of the healthcare pages buried amongst the other stuff that the gentleman was talking about, was that after this plan is in effect, after 5 or 10 years right there, that part of it was using a chip to be able to identify us, whether we get health care or not. Now, I know they're pushing that Real ID Act again. That's coming around. And the way this was explained in it on there right there is actually an implantable chip, that Vera chip, the one that Virginia outlawed a couple weeks ago. Does he know anything about this? Is there any way he can look up that information? And I kind of joined late, and I didn't get his website, if you wouldn't mind repeating it again.
Sure, I don't mind at all. It's the website, and by the way, I'm a former neighbor of yours. I lived for a couple of years in McAllen, Texas, so I know exactly where Harlingen is. And but in any event, the website's www.the like the dog, the cat, the bird, THE, and then our initials, NHF.com. So go to that, and then if you click on the government affairs button, it'll take you through to those areas, and then if you click on the codex button, it'll take you through to the codex thing as well. And while you're at it, click on the email list and sign up for our email list. We absolutely promise you that we do not give your email address to anyone. We don't trade it. We don't loan it. We don't sell it. We don't do anything with it. In fact, there are only about 3 of us at the organization that have access to it. We're fanatics about protecting your privacy. So don't hesitate to sign up on our email list. And we don't inundate you with a bunch of emails either. But you'll get these updates. In fact, we're just coming out with a press release on Obamacare later today. So if you sign up right away, you'll get that one tonight. Anyway.
Okay, I got a, your website is THENHF.
No, T, unless I misheard you, THE, Thomas Harry Edwards National Health Federation. So THENHF.com.
Got it. Yeah, the like the cat, the dog, got you now.
Exactly. Yeah. It's just And then it just to answer your thing on the Virus chip, I know in Europe they're already starting to use it, for example, at bars in Barcelona. When the young people want to order a drink, they just stick their hand over to the barkeeper and bartender, and he scans their hand, and then it pays for their drink and everything. And then they pick it up, and they think it's really, as they would say, cool to do that. And I know there's a move afoot to, as you were saying quite rightly, to reinstitute the real ID system here, and they'll probably backdoor it at some point, but or try to at least. But to be honest with you, I'm not sure if it is in the healthcare bill or not. Again, I was caught away from my computer. I could have looked it up pretty quickly had I been next to my computer, but I'm not. So I apologize to you that I can't give you an answer on that particular thing. However, having said that, I would be very surprised if it weren't in there, or at least the provisions for eventually adopting it were not in there.
Yeah, I'm currently in Colorado. I'm an over-the-road driver, and I drive out of the valley down there. And last night I sat there in Amarillo, and I was having a nice little conversation with an Amarillo city officer at the truck stop, and I was explaining to him some of the stuff goes on. I actually make up a leaflet and I hand it out to people, and I'll add your website to that.
Thank you very much.
I had that one short question. I'm going to let you get to another caller so everybody else gets a chance at it.
Okay.
Great. Thank you, Gus. Appreciate that.
Thank you.
And we have, unfortunately, what's happened with today is that our tech wizard is in flight right now, headed out to Southern California for the conference along with the publisher. And so there was – normally we have where people can access and type in questions online, and it seems that that's not functioning at this moment. So normally we have quite a bit of activity from that. So I apologize that we don't – whoever may have been trying can't get those questions to us, and we certainly apologize for that. I would say that maybe, Scott, I'm not sure. I don't want to speak for you, but – is there a way that people may be able to email certain questions to you that you can answer them in the future for them, or maybe call a number or some way access to
No, I'll give them. I'll give for those who were kind enough to listen to me today and put up with me. I'll give my email address if they want to write it down. You can email me directly, and I'll answer you best I can and as quickly as I can. I'm traveling right now, so I'm not always next to a computer, but if you want to get a pen ready or your computer ready to write this down, type it in. The only thing I say is to you is I get so much spam that if you write "Hello Scott" or "Viagra" in the subject line, it gets automatically deleted. Or Rolex watches. So don't put those in the subject line. Put something like webinar question or NHF. Will catch my eye if you want to just put NHF question, something like that, and then I'll know not to delete because I go on autopilot when I get these all this junk mail. I delete in microseconds almost, so it has to be something that catches my eye and stops me because I obviously won't recognize your email address. Anyway, mine is my first name, Scott, S-C-O-T-T, then the at sign, and then Riviera Mail, that's one word, R-I-V, as in Victor, I-E-R-A, and then just the word mail, all one word, mail.com. So Scott at RivieraMail.com. And you're welcome to write me. Again, put something in the subject line that will arrest my eyes so I won't delete you. If for some reason you don't hear back from me within a couple of days, I might have deleted you anyway. Just resend it, okay?
Okay, great. Well, that's good. And I, you know, and looking on your website, I noticed there's just so many things here. You know, certainly you have information all across the board related to health freedom issues, government affairs, pending legislation. Looks like you have information on about fluoridation, and of course, Codex Alimentarius that we touched on. Even what's going on with the European Union area issues there.
Yeah, we're quite active there. We have chapters in about six different countries and growing over there. And I really invite you listeners to please join us. I mean, really, it's only $36. What is that, $3 a month? And it really helps us because when we go to these Codex meetings, you know, we're often asked, how many members do you have? Who do you represent? All of that. And the more members we have, the more clout we actually have at the meeting. It helps us a lot. So, and you'll be doing a good thing. I mean, for $36, that's not even a meal these days for two people. So, so please join. You can do that online, or if you don't trust online, call in with a credit card information or just mail a check.
What number would they call?
They would call 626 area code. That's out here in the L.A. area. 626 area code, and then 357-2181. And even if no one answers, you can leave the information on the answering machine. We have a very good secretary there named Tina, quite capable, and she's handles our memberships, and she can take the information either off the machine or when if you reach her directly. So please do sign up for the e-list for free and or join us. And, of course, we prefer that you become a member. You'll get the magazine as well, and that'll help keep you informed, and you'll have the satisfaction knowing you're helping keep me and others at the Codex meeting as the only voice for health freedom at these Codex meetings.
So important. It really is. And, of course, it looks like you keep us apprised of what's going on with the FDA, the notorious FDA, vaccinations, different events that are going on,
right.
Books and videos that are important, lots of things here. So this organization is certainly well-established, has been around for a long, long time, and has been doing very important work. And I might add, you're not one of these organizations that just got co-opted over time or watered down or begin to work the other side of the fence.
That's a good point, Earl. I'm glad you mentioned that because I really am proud of it. I mean, throughout its 55 years, we've always been the most radical proponents for health freedom. And I use radical in kind of a nice way, not a bad way. And we've never been captured by the other side, which is true. You see, others, like even the trade organizations for the vitamin, mineral, you know, food supplement business, they are starting to be captured by the drug companies. It's amazing. We even had the AMA spying on us because of our stance on vaccines and on water fluoridation. They spied on our conventions for years in the 60s and 70s. We found that out when someone was doing research in their archives and contacted us out of the blue and said, hey, I just thought you ought to know that the AMA was spying on you guys for, like, years, and I found the records here of what they were doing. We took that as a huge compliment. So, yeah, we take all this money that we get from various members, all what we get from various members very seriously. We don't travel first class and live in the lap of luxury while we're doing this. We try to stay with friends, or if we can't, stay in cheaper hotels and, you know, take the bus and the train and not, you know, have a rental car or a taxi or any limo or any of that stuff. So we spend it cheaply and as cheaply as possible so that we can make the dollars go farther.
Well, you know, that's interesting because it's kind of funny, but, you know, you can tell that you guys are not in it for the money. You're in it for the cause. You're really passionate about it, and you believe what you're doing, and you want to be successful in getting the word out and making a real change, a significant difference. And that counts because you can tell some organizations, they get real flush with money, and they start selling out.
Yeah, they really do. It's true. And, you know, Earl, I make less than a legal secretary. Here I've been practicing law for almost 30 years, and a lot of my colleagues are multimillionaires, you know, still in big law firms, partners, senior partners even. And I could have gone that route, but I make less than their starting legal secretaries. So you're definitely right. I'm not in this for the money, or I'd be doing something else.
I hear you. Well, we need people like that. Thank God we've got a lot of them in different areas working towards our freedoms, and we certainly need it with all those working on the other end of things. We've got, let's see, this might be the same gentleman that was just on. Did you have another question, sir, from Texas, the Harlingen?
Yes, sir. He mentioned about fluoridation or fluoride. I've heard that before, and I'm not really quite about it. I know it's got something important to do. Could he explain that to me so I could, layman's terms, I'm not a really college person.
Well, just in a nutshell, of course, you know, fluoride was ostensibly added to water to help protect the teeth of especially developing children to keep them from getting cavities. In fact, there's no proof whatsoever that it has any such effect. But really what we think the underlying agenda was, or the overlying agenda was to get rid of these toxic chemicals. Fluoride is a toxic chemical byproduct, and how do you dump it? Well, gosh, you can try to bury it, but a lot of communities won't have you do that. Why not tout it as a process for preventing people from getting cavities? So they talk municipalities into dumping it into the water supply at levels where they mass medicate everyone. But the problem with this kind of fluoride is it's actually very toxic. It actually helps people die faster. It doesn't protect your teeth at all. There are far better ways to protect your teeth, by the way, including just making sure you have adequate magnesium intake, vitamin D, boron, silicon, if you can get that as well, or where you get that. And, I mean, there are other things as well. I don't mention, notably, you'll notice, calcium, because most people have more than adequate calcium in their diet. What they really need is magnesium, because magnesium's a traffic cop that tells calcium where to go. Without magnesium, just taking calcium alone will actually kill you, too, because it accumulates in your soft tissues, your arteries, your skin, giving you wrinkles and the like. Where you want it to go is in the bones and teeth to make them solid and strong. And the only thing that will do that is magnesium is the traffic cop that directs it away from the soft tissue and into the hard tissue. Boron also helps, as does vitamin D. So that's the real key. And in any event, selenium is a very important anti-cancer, antiviral mineral that is very deficient in most of the world's diet. Interestingly enough, where you live, sir, the soil is very rich in selenium, but that is the exception, not the rule in the world. Most of the Midwestern states, especially, you know, Colorado, Wyoming, Montana, the provinces of Alberta, Saskatchewan, North, the Dakotas, they have very selenium-rich soil, so if you eat bread or products grown on those soils, it's pretty good. Or if you eat one Brazil nut a day, you'll get 200 micrograms a day. But back to the point. The point is that when you ingest this fluoride, it displaces selenium from your body, so it's actually doing more harm that way. It's also been implicated in developmental disorders with children, with all sorts of developmental problems and the like. So we have information on our website that can tell you far more than I can, but that's just a sort of a brief overview.
All right. I got the second question I had. My wife was telling me last night, or night before last, as I'm on the road, about a senator, one of the senators that's refusing to vote for this reconciliation.
Jim Bunning from Kentucky.
Is he the one they're trying to demonize right now? Is that the one?
Yeah, but he caved in about 5 days ago. He finally caved in to the pressure, and he signed up on it. I think it was because it was the Jobs Unemployment Act thing. It wasn't. See, they're trying to pass the health care with the reconciliation, And but he was the one that was the holdout, bless his heart, for withstanding as long as he did. I can't really blame him that eventually he caved in, but he was the only one with the guts in the Senate to stand up on this point. He was saying we're taking the budget with this unemployment extension. They want to grab the money by borrowing it, and we have to go into debt even more. And he said, this isn't right. We need to cut other programs. He said he would vote for the unemployment if it was taking money from existing sources rather than adding to our debt. And so eventually they placated him in some way. I forget what it was they did, what kind of deal they struck, but it wasn't a great deal. But he was under so much pressure, even from his own party, that he eventually...
Well, what he said trying to make him look like he was gay or something, asking his staff members. And I said, it doesn't surprise me that they sink to that level. This health care bill right here, they're not getting it. It's telling me that this agenda theirs has got to go through, whether life or death matters. It doesn't matter to them. They don't want to shove it down our throats because they got no other choice. And I'm like you right there. If they don't get their agenda done, and it looks like maybe a Ron Paul might end up in office right there, they're probably going to find a way to stop it.
Yeah, that's a good point. And so we just have to stay vigilant, stay on top of it, and actually send our thanks to people, those kind of senators or senator like Bunning, who stand their ground even as long as they do. At least the one good thing he did, even though he delayed it, just for, a week or two or however long it was, I don't really recall, he did bring a lot of high-profile publicity to that issue, and that was a good thing, too. So hopefully more and more people wake up to that effect, to that fact and take. Sorry?
Yeah, I hear you saying I got John Conrad and Kay Bailey Hutchison are my senators on the Republican side, but I got Senator Solomon Ortiz down there represents us locally. And when I call in and I want to speak and oppose a bill, Kay Bailey Hutchison, which is not the greatest one in the world, and John Conrad, just asked me for my zip code. Well, Senator, the guys at the A's to answer the phone down there for Salma Sartre, they won't know my name, my full name, and my street address, and they refuse to forward my messages. And I'm like, why do you need that right there? Do you want to try to demonize me or something or send, my zip code should be. I watched him. I got involved with MegaVote and Congress.org and roll call, and he's voted yes on each and every bill that's come down the line since last April.
Who did this?
Solomon Ortiz. He does not know how to say no.
Yeah, I know. He's such a loser. And that's the problem with today's society. Everything's backwards anyway. Schools no longer teach education. Churches no longer teach religion or spirituality. Justice is no longer dispensed by the courts. Everything's backwards. It's the military really doesn't do a job of defending our borders. You name it, it's all backwards.
Well, they're not trying to defend the borders down there. They built that wall down there. I don't know when the last time you were down there, and they put those like railroad ties or whatever it is above the concrete wall, and they shimmy right over it.
really?
Yes, they do.
Yeah.
They rather stop you on the interstate down there at the border checkpoints and harass you than actually sit down there and put motion detectors up and catch them. And I think the Border Patrol probably has their hands tied, more or less.
Yeah. Oh, I think so, too. They're probably well-meaning men and women. It's just they are not given the support by the higher-ups. It's like that in Congress. The only decent congressmen and congresswomen are those usually recently elected, not all of them, but if you're going to find them at all, the recently elected Republican freshmen congressmen and women, because they haven't yet been corrupted by the Republican Party higher-ups. And then the Democrats you can pretty much forget about. They were born corrupt. And so that's about it. But we've really just got to do something to stop slide down, and we really don't have much more time. In fact, many argue we ran out of time years ago.
Well, IMF a week or so ago called for a new world currency right there. I figure we got about 12 months before they start shoving it down our throat. And
well,
we collapse this dollar, and I think that's what's going to come to the collapse of the dollar to bring the currency in. We're all going to be in one big shit sandwich, sir, if you don't mind me saying it.
Hey, I don't know if we can say that on air, but no, I'm teasing. One of my very good friends, and I'll leave you with this, and a big, strong supporter of the National Health Federation, in fact, he's our financial advisor, is a very nice gentleman by the name of Harry Schultz. He's a legendary financial newsletter writer. He's about 2 years younger than God, and I had lunch with him in Monaco about a week and a half ago, and he was talking about the dollar situation. I know we're going off the topic of health here, even though that was part of what he and I spoke of at the time, but he is definitely down on the dollar. The dollar is very strong right now compared to the euro and that sort of thing. I shouldn't maybe use the adjective very, but it is strong relative to the euro, and it's strong relative to a number of other currencies. But at some point in the near future, it's going to really hit a strong, strong downdraft, and a lot of people will have their assets destroyed. So now is the time to move into gold and silver if you haven't already. And
what little bit of money I do have, I've been on that. I purchased mostly silver, what I could afford. And,
just make sure you're buying from a reputable person, because there are a lot of reports about out there about fake coins and fake bars, because they're actually running out of gold in many respects, with the demand being what it is. And there are reports the U.S. government may have sold from its vaults actually tungsten bars that were gold coated.
Mm-hmm.
And pushing it as actually gold bars. I don't know. That's just a rumor. But
I see something on that. I don't know if it was Money in Markets, or they sent me something about that where they tapped into them, they drilled into the bars, and there's lead inside
that's
of them.
Yeah, I saw that too, but I'd heard it way before that. Bob Chapman puts out a newsletter also called the International Forecaster that gives a lot of information with the details as well. But the main thing to realize, I think, on the health freedom front and health front is that we really need to act strongly to protect ourselves from the implementation of codex within the borders, and that means getting people elected who will respect our rights under Deshaies and under the Constitution, and then taking a proactive united front with I hope our organization, the National Health Federation, but if you prefer another health freedom organization, go with them. But at least act together and act united. And also be what I have always called persistently vocal. That means, and it sounds like you do this, sir, that is, you don't just write one letter and then sit back and watch reruns of Gilligan's Island, or fold your socks. You then pick up the phone and call. You then send an email. You then try to go down and visit them personally. You then try to get your family and friends to go with you and visit them personally, that is the congressman or congresswoman. And then you start the process all over again. They'll be so sick and tired of you, they'll want to vote your way just to get you to shut up. So that's what we do, and that's what we've got to do. And if enough people do that, you know, that like they say, politicians don't see the light. They only feel the heat. So we want to make them feel the heat. Not only on health freedom issues, but those other issues that are important to us, those other freedom issues. So I'll leave you with that unless there's another question or two.
Yes, there's another. Do we have another person? Sorry. Yes, but we do need to move on. Thank you for your input. It's great. Appreciate that. Okay, we've got this one is, it says anonymous, so let me just unmute it and we'll see who speaks up. Are you there, guest?
Same person, surprise, surprise. And by the way, I'm happy to report that I'm on a community well, which I do my fair share to maintain. And we, hip, hip, hooray, don't add fluoride to our water.
Right.
Yeah. My question is it of the utmost important, and I have a million questions for you, but I'll save them for email. Is it of utmost importance that you avoid sodium fluoride in your dental care products, your mouthwash, your toothpaste?
Yes, it is.
what, because I mean, it's you know, you literally, unless you stick with a brand and the store has your brand, you have to painstakingly go through what's on the shelf to see what doesn't have the sodium fluoride. So I just wanted to see how important it was to avoid it.
Yeah, it's extremely important. I myself stopped using fluoride-laced toothpaste years ago.
Okay.
I'm sorry to say it wasn't decades ago, but at least years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And there are many products out there, mainly if you go to Whole Foods Market or something like that, you can buy it. You still have to be careful because they sell a lot that have fluoride in it. But if you will either make your own using baking soda baking soda and salt mixture, I think, you can make your own. But there are other ways. You can go online and get toothpaste formulas. Probably Google that and come up with some. But if you want to buy some that are not expensive, Echodent makes a very fine tooth powder without fluoride. You can buy it at any health food store. It's ECO-Dent, Echodent.
Okay.
I've used that for years. There's another toothpaste that's in a toothpaste form that's really excellent.
My dentist gets upset with me when, you know, she sees that I haven't been brushing my teeth, and I'm not going to sit here and tell her that, you know, I refuse to use fluoride and just, you know, have her think I'm strange. So I just apologize to her. Sorry.
Well, use Echodent. Use Echodent or some variation on that theme. And Echodent's, not, you know, one little bottle of that costs like $7 or $8, but it lasts you several months, and it's well worth it. And you just get used to wetting your toothbrush first, and then you pour the powder on so it sticks to the wet bristle, and then away you go. So that's my recommendation. And some of these health food stores will have other products that are just as good, if not better, than Echodent. So, but be careful, because even Tom's of Maine, that very nice, used to be very nice, toothpaste, a lot of their products are laced with fluoride. But yes, it's important, because that way, even more than drinking the water, you're getting a very concentrated form of the sodium fluoride that's bad for you. And it's even bad in ways I don't even know about, but I've read about, at least I don't remember, and I can't tell you here. So be very, very careful to avoid it where you can. I remember some chemist or biochemist explaining to me once that it sits very close to another element on the periodic chart. I can't remember which one, and it very easily displaces it in the body biochemically. Yeah. And that's an even larger danger than any I've mentioned. But I'm a little bit embarrassed to say I don't remember I don't have the periodic chart in front of me, and I don't remember what that element is that sits next to that it displaces in the body, but it's something important. And so this is just the tip of the iceberg. It's a huge, huge myth that fluoride helps people. It doesn't. It harms them very much so. It'll shorten your lifespan. And it will definitely displace selenium in the body, which is very antiviral, very anti-cancer. You absolutely need to have selenium at least 200 micrograms a day to protect yourself or help protect yourself from cancer and from viruses, from the influenza.
The last thing I wanted to quickly mention is that there exists, I realize it's very difficult to find good, healthy food in grocery stores. 90% of it is processed unless they have, you know, a health food aisle, which really doesn't compensate for, you know, the rest of the store, but, you know, having a health food aisle is better than not having one. There is a National Co-op Grocers Association, which you have probably heard of. So I encourage anybody who complains about not having a food co-op in their area, and I just find Whole Foods to be badly overpriced. I encourage them to, you know, use their energy to start a food co-op, you know, in their neighborhood. And, of course, the other advantage of that is that you don't have those shopper tracking cards. But the NCGA will, you know, they'll send you a big kit, and they'll help you with whatever you you need help with.
Yeah, that's an excellent idea. I totally agree with you. I think if one can do that, You're far along the path of taking advantage or taking into your own hands your own health care.
Absolutely. We appreciate that, Gus. I know you always have such good input, and I know we're drawing close to the end of the webinar, so thank you very much. And I'm going to go ahead and let's see. What I would urge everybody to do at this point, Scott, is to come to the Health Freedom Conference. It's being held starting tomorrow and through the weekend, actually all the way through Monday, in Ontario at the Ontario Hilton Hotel. That's, you can find the information on that at freedomlawconference.com. And I'm trying to remember, Scott, for those that want to either, that are attending and want to make sure they catch your talk or they're going to hear the live webcast, what do you remember what time you're speaking, what day and time?
Well, I know I'm supposed to be there, but it's tomorrow, as you mentioned, Friday, and it's between 7 and 10 p.m., and I think they're having dinner at the 7 o'clock time frame. My speech will be right after that.
Oh, that's right. You're the dinner speaker, of course. Okay.
Yeah, they want everyone's mouths to be full, so or to have food handy to throw at me. I think that's really it. So.
I'm sure that they're going to be listening very attentively to what you have to say, and I appreciate all that you've shared today. I know literally we could, we could go to the rest of the day, but we all have lives of things we have to attend to. And, you know, perhaps we can look at another time. You can visit us again, and we won't have the glitches that we had today. I know that, you would have been a little more prepared with the right timing. I know I may have created some confusion about the timing of the webinar,
but you graciously
pulled over and used your cell phone. And actually, it was pretty clear. I mean, I couldn't tell you weren't on a landline. And then we had the technical glitch with the questions online and so forth. But anyway, we'll look forward to the event this weekend, and certainly everyone can access it one way or another. Either they can attend it for free because there's no charge. It's on an honor donation basis for those who can donate. Or online, you can listen free by going to a Health Freedom Conference. .com, and there'll be a link there. You can actually hear the whole thing live, starting at 9 a.m. Pacific tomorrow, and throughout the weekend. So one way or another, you can certainly join in with the activities that are going on. And thank you, Scott, again.
Oh,
really
thank
appreciate
you,
it.
All of you, actually.
Yeah, and if I'll announce a couple of things, and then if you, there's one thing you'd like to share with us in parting, that would be the time to do it. I want to remind everybody that we'll have a full slate of webinars next week, and information will go out on that, but you can plan on the usual Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday at the same time for our webinars. And today's webinar has been recorded. You'll find it at republicmagazine.com/webinar. This webinar and the others that we've had in the past, certainly feel free to download any or all of them that you choose to, share them, send them out to your list, get the word out, because that's how we make change. If enough education happens, then you're going to see an acceleration of the tremendous change that we're already seeing in this last year or so in the political and freedom landscape that we see out there. And I think it's just the tip of the iceberg of what we're going to see, and that's very encouraging. So with that, Scott, if there's something you'd like to leave us with, this will be a perfect time to do that.
Well, thank you. It's just to really say thank you to all your listeners. I really admire them so much because it shows some real thinking going on in their head to go against, you know, mainstream indoctrination. And that sort of leads me into the final words, which is simply to say, stay vigilant, stay really informed. Don't believe everything you read, especially if it's from conventional sources or news sources. Take it with a grain of salt. There's a lot of manipulation going on out there, as we all know or should know. And then be proactive, be persistently vocal, and stand up for your rights. Because if you don't, who will? And then at last but not least, I really hope you would join us at NHF because we need your help. Without you, we're nothing. And I really mean it. We're the sum total of all our individual members, and they're what have kept us going for 55 years now. Thank you.
Great. Well, congratulations on that. That's quite an achievement. I look for, you know, so many more years of what the NHF has been doing, and certainly Godspeed its efforts. We sure need many activities like that going on. And
thank you.
Let's hope it continues.
Okay.
And I will look forward to meeting you, Scott, at the conference very soon. And anyone else listening that's coming, come by our table. We'll have current and back issues of the magazine. And, you know, you're certainly welcome to take some with you and meet us. And we'd love to meet you there. So with that, thank you, everyone, for joining us today. We'll look for you to be with us next week. And this officially ends our webinar. Have a good rest of the day. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Earl. Bye.